Am I starting? You always start. Why are you flipping it up on me?
Didn't know if you had an ad lib or something to say in the beginning, is all.
No, not really. We're just going to stare at each other awkwardly, which doesn't translate well to audio. But
yeah. So
for everyone who's listening, that was weird.
Yeah. What's going on, everybody? You got Javen and Anna here, and you are listening to STL by Design, brought to you by AIGA St. Louis. Tell me something good, Anna.
You know, I don't really know. I feel like not a whole lot has been happening. It's been a boring... I feel like it's been either a boring or just uninteresting couple weeks. What about you? You have a better story than that?
You know, whenever I'm put on the spot, I don't really always have great stories, especially ones that are good to share on this podcast, per se.
That's fair. I watched a lot of Game of Thrones. That's it. That's all I did.
In preparation for the new stuff?
Yeah. I don't remember anything.
April?
Yeah. April 14th. Or somewhere, or 16th, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not talk about Game of Thrones. There could be someone who's never seen it.
We don't have to talk about it. That's all I did, though.
Yeah.
It's not all I did. That's all I remember doing.
The show is certainly long enough at this point, but
it really is.
We digress. So
we haven't even started, and we're getting off track.
So Anna's doing well. I'm chilling. So if you're joining us for the first time, we are Design for Good co-chairs within the board of AIGA St. Louis, and our intent with the show is to highlight any efforts at the intersection of creativity and positive impact.
And if you joined us last week and need a recap, or if you haven't listened yet, we talked with Emily Elhoffer of Made STL, which is a local makerspace, and they have... over 50 pieces of state-of-the-art machinery. They have training. They cater to anyone that considers himself a maker, an artist, a designer, an entrepreneur. So that was actually pretty fun. And we did it at Made, so we got a little bit of a tour.
It's a dope space.
It's pretty cool.
Dope space. A whole lot of stuff going on.
Reminds me of college a little. Facilities.
A little bit more,
A little nicer.
Nicer is the word.
We had pretty nice facilities in college, but
right. It
feels different when you don't have to do it.
What?
When you don't have to do it for a grade. It feels, more exciting to be in those spaces when you're not like, I have to be there until 3 a.m. or I fail. I get to be here till 3 a.m. Well, I guess you can't. Never mind. Anyway.
So, in other news.
So, this week, we'll be talking to Global Hack, which is a nonprofit organization, and it drives social impact through technology. They organize events that kickstart community-focused software projects and deliver accessible computer science education opportunities for kids.
That's right. And one of the things that we did end up talking about is an event they have coming up February 22nd through the 24th this weekend, if you're listening this week, basically called Code with a Cause. And basically, Code with a Cause is a hackathon that benefits nonprofit organizations in the greater St. Louis region.
Yeah, and they have a lot of cool nonprofits that are benefiting this year. So we talk about them a little bit.
We did. But before we get to listing off that's in this episode, let's get straight to it. And if you stick around long enough, through this episode, we want to talk to you all about the student conference, which is also this weekend. Not to overshadow that, but anyway, we're going to keep it moving.
All right, everyone, we're talking to McKenna Sawcheck from Global Hack, and they are... Actually, I'm going to let you talk about it, what Global Hack is.
Yeah. So we are a nonprofit. We're located downtown. We've been around. We just celebrated our 5-year anniversary. And we really, so what our mission is we solve civic problems through technology. So that means, that can mean like a lot of different things to different people. Where we focus on are our hackathons and then our youth program. So we kind of have two different directions that we go in.
That's awesome. And so why did you and your team kind of feel like an organization like Global Hack was important to have in St. Louis specifically?
So St. Louis, we have so many great nonprofits, but we really didn't have one that does what Global Hack does, which is bridging that gap between technology and nonprofits, mm-hmm. which is technology, I mean, is everything nowadays. So bringing that to the nonprofit and civic world is really where St. Louis was kind of lacking. So our founders saw that gap and tried to fill it.
Was there inspiration from like other organizations? Because I feel like I've heard about similar kind of initiatives mm-hmm. and organizations in other states. And so I was wondering if that was something that you kind of looked at as like inspiration when you were thinking about how can we bridge this gap between the nonprofit sector and the tech sector?
For sure. So civic technology is huge right now, which is really where we feel like our kind of niche is. So there are a lot of other organizations in other states that are working towards that right now. And I mean, we don't try to recreate the wheel. Like if we see a great hackathon model in another city, we bring that to St. Louis and try to better through either like through our communities or partnering with others.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Why have to, like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel if it's mm-hmm. already kind of working somewhere else.
Yeah.
How long has Global Hack been around?
5 years, but for the first few years, we really, and I've only been here a year, so, mm-hmm. but we've been around 5 years. For the first few years, though, we focused more on, like, partnering with corporations to solve mm-hmm. their technology problems, so we didn't really touch too much into the civic. We've always been a nonprofit, though, and then in 2014, or maybe 2015, yeah, 2015, our executive director got brought on, and that's when we really, like, shifted everything civic-focused. So we do still have some partner hackathons, like with Express Scripts, Purina. Our, like, main bread and butter are civic hackathons and youth programs. And that's only been around for, like, 3 years.
So when did your youth programming start? Did it start around the same time, or?
So that was in 2016.
Okay.
So we're in our third year, we'll be in our third year of our summer camp, which is a big deal. I keep growing, so.
That's awesome. And so you have the summer camp, and then do you have other youth programs that happen like during this mm-hmm. quote-unquote school year?
Yep. So we really run all year round with our youth programs. They're just a little bit different. So we have our summer camp, which they're 8-week different courses, ages 10 to 18 is who we serve. And then we also, I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but Google came out with some coding curriculum for kids.
Mm. Yeah.
It's called CS First. We've implemented that in like 20 plus sites this year. It's been a really big hit. So we bring in the instructors, we teach them, and then they go into the schools as an after school program.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us about, you have an event coming up called the Youth Coding Competition, right? So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So this is an end to the program that's been running 12 weeks through the students' fall semester. So they had 12 weeks beginning in September, and then they took a little bit of time off to kind of make their final projects. And they come together for a full Saturday event. They do live coding, so they have to, we present them with a challenge and they have to code pretty quickly. And it's a really a big like teamwork. We have a lot of different things that they do we want them to not just work on their coding skills, but also their soft skills, mm-hmm. which is so big right now. So that's kind of where like some of our other team initiatives come from.
Okay.
And then, they've been working on these projects for 12 weeks now. So we get to see them come together.
Yep. That's awesome.
Our theme is a backstage pass. So anything their minds can think of, from concerts, if kids go to concerts anymore.
They do. Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I think so. YouTube, anything in that spectrum. So.
So do they have a perimeter for like what they create? Can it be like an app or a website or like what are they making? Is that limited or?
So I believe it's a game.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. So they have to have a game. Don't quote me on that, though.
Okay. We won't hold you to that.
Yes.
But there is something that they have to create that's everyone is creating kind of the same thing.
Like their final project is what our youth programs director refers to it as.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I believe it's a game.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's all in Python, so.
Why does Global Hack feel like youth programming is so important? Like, why is it so important for people that are in this age range of, like, preteen, basically, to teen learn these skills now as opposed to when they go to college or after college?
So regarding the age range, so most of our programs focus on middle schools. We do have some like high school programs through our summer camp, and we even go down to like some 10 year olds. But really the middle school is where we kind of found like our sweet spot. And unfortunately, there's not a ton of research out there that substantiates why middle school, but educators in the St. Louis area is who we really reached out to and leaned on when we were setting up our curriculum. And they just felt like a lot of middle schoolers, like they had that interest. And if they could grab that interest in computer science at a young age, then like it could take them. We're really focused on like job readiness. So if they have that interest now, then taking that into college with them or finding an apprenticeship after high school, we just felt like that age range was so good for this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just was curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it gives them plenty of time to kind of be adventurous within the field as well, you know, because like when we, I can't speak for you, but I'm going to speak for you, Anna.
Thank you.
When we learned, you know, like web development and all that stuff, we were already.
I was in college.
Late high
for
school,
sure.
College. Yeah. I mean, late high school was like basic HTML, which really sucked. But, you know, by the time college rolled around, it was a little more advanced. But now, like, these kids have the advantage of really digging into it. And so by the time they do, you know, and who knows, maybe it'll be earlier, you know, by the time they get it all figured out and are ready to work somewhere.
Yeah.
Raising a bunch of, I don't want to say baby geniuses, but, you know.
I mean.
They could be baby geniuses.
Yeah.
Especially at coding.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
We have an eighth grader now that can code better than, like, some of our developers. I mean, or not some of our developers, but just some of our participants. Like, he's amazing from what I hear.
Well, it's such a good age range, too, because those are such formative years, and it's when you're learning the best, I feel like. You know, like, you're soaking all of this in, and you're just picking it up a lot faster than I think sometimes adults. It always seems easier when you're a kid.
I know. And for so many adults, technology wasn't even really a thing when they were younger.
Yeah.
I mean, even I was kind of, we had a computer, but it was something I used Instant Messenger for. It wasn't something I ever wanted to, I didn't even knew what coding was until I was out of college, honestly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Missouri is one of the last states to implement legislature to have computer science curriculum as a mandatory part of high school education for them to graduate. So that's going to be the next big hurdle for us as a state to implement that. And because some kids don't even have to, I feel like computer science nowadays is so important. Like, how could you not have a class on that in high school? And unfortunately, Missouri doesn't regulate that right now. So, so a lot of them still do. Yes. But it could always be better.
And so you said you didn't get into coding until you were out of college. How did that happen?
So I don't consider myself a coder at all, but I know some front end, like basic HTML, CSS, and I love it. Like, I love working on that end, which I know is very basic. But I was doing an internship in public relations, and it was my first experience with having to update websites and landscapes and all of that. So, and I've highly considered many times going to launch code and trying to learn it. And it's because it's really one of those things that I was obsessed with, like even just the HTML stuff. So.
I remember loving that.
The internet's evolved really quickly, right? And so even, what year is it, 19? So 9 years ago, this was a high school class for me, and it was worlds different. And this was like basic, one colored, you know, home page with like serif text. You're really fancy if you can get the background to change colors on the screen. Shit like that. So it was like, it's nowhere near compared to what, you know, these kids.
Oh, no, not at all. But there was a level of exposure that I think a lot of people never had. And so
even
getting that basic, you can kind of tell right away if you like it or not.
Which I did,
you know,
not.
And so if you like that, then that's at least another door that's been opened for you. Versus never having had that opportunity. Like if I, you know, so I think that even that basic level of knowledge, but also, I mean, I think it should be more extensive. And I know like grade schools are like, apparently my old grade school has like a coding class for like second graders and it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Like they don't actually code. Mm-hmm. Obviously, but they
more
use
like
visual. Yeah, they use drag and drop to understand systems and logic.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We have a whole like coding resource for like K through 12 because kids can start as young as pretty much they can hold and understand. They think of it as a game at their age.
Yeah.
So if you can like gamify that, just such a trendy word right now. But
it works.
Yeah, it does.
It works. And that logic skill is important to learn. And I feel like I never really learned that a whole lot other than like math class, which if you don't like math, you're never going to learn it.
Yeah. And
that's
in
my opinion, because that's what happened to me is you just kind of, you try, but there's a block. But if it's a game and you've learned it early enough and it associates something fun and like interesting to you, then
I'm going way off. Schoolhouse Rock method. Well, that's a good point. So can you talk to us about Code with a Cause?
Yeah. So this is our second Code with a Cause event that we are doing. And this was another one that our executive director kind of mirrored from his hometown in Iowa. They do something similar, and he just saw the impact that it has. So we brought it to St. Louis last year. We just accepted our 10 nonprofits. It was really hard to decide. This year, we just had so many good project ideas. But, yeah, so that's going to be February 22nd through 24th. And we've got our participants ready to go. They partner with the nonprofit. So we have the 10 teams and the 10 nonprofits that come. And the nonprofits really work with the participants to solve whatever technological issue they submitted to us and we accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then hopefully at the end of the weekend they'll come out with, in an ideal world, it would be a product that they could implement that next day.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it just gets the ground running and it still saves them so much time and resources. Because that's really where we found with nonprofits. They just don't have the resources to build these databases, to update their websites, to really work with the populations that they aim for. So,
So how do you pick projects? I know it's hard, but like what kind of criteria are you looking for?
So we have a fairly extensive application process that they need to go through and kind of tell us what their problem is, what they think the solution is, because that really like kind of expedites the project making the weekend of the hackathon.
Right.
And it's like in a perfect world, we could accept all of them.
Yeah.
We could help everybody. But we really pick ones that we feel like will both challenge our participants and also are realistic.
Right.
So though updating websites for nonprofits can be kind of one of those, like, we don't want people just to think that we're making websites for nonprofits, though we did accept some that are a little bit more extensive, but it's also about, like, integrating, like, an app into what they're currently doing, a database, that kind of thing, so.
So is there any way you can tell us who some of these nonprofits are?
Yeah. I can. The project ideas are still a little bit, like, we solidify those closer to the date. But we have ACLU of Missouri.
Nice.
Yes.
Awesome.
We have Alive. They are a...
I was thinking Alive Magazine, so
Alive, Inc. So they're a nonprofit in St. Louis, and all of these are St. Louis-based that help women and children who are in endangered situations at home get out of those situations. So their project is very super meaningful to me, and really all of them are, but that was one. genetic health, which they help kind of level the playing field for. And in St. Louis, there are a lot more Black children that die in the first year due to SIDS because they don't have access to appropriate sleeping cribs, pack and plays. We have Wings of Hope. You guys are testing me on who all we.
You don't have to mention all of them. Don't. Okay. There's no pressure. We just want to hear a little sneak peek of what's gonna go down.
But there are a lot of good projects. Last year, I wasn't here for the 2018 one, but this year apparently the project applications were just like of higher quality. So we're hoping that just continues each year and really hoping to make an impact. So
on the flip side, how do you pick participants for this?
So this is the first in our first hackathon of all of the ones that we've done a vetting process where they submitted applications to even participate. So usually we just kind of put it out there to our community for the participants to register. And this year, because we really want our nonprofits to walk away with the most meaningful experience, we wanted to make sure that we had the right people in the room. So we had them apply and just kind of rate their skills on all the way from front end work to nonprofit software, because we wanted to gauge where they were. So, but we closed that application on the 11th of January and we have all of our participants selected. So fingers crossed it's going to go over great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when the final products of this hackathon are these things that these nonprofits can then kind of take and run with, or are these kind of concept level, or kind of to what level are these done?
So, and it kind of varies. My understanding is from last year, some of the projects came out pretty ready to roll out for the nonprofits. Other ones, and that is one of our criteria on the application, is we do want to make sure that the nonprofits that we select have somebody to oversee this project long term, because we don't want it to just die after the hackathon. We really want this to work into the making of the organization and help it. And so not all of the projects come out perfect, but it really saves them so much time and money and resources in general to kind of come in this 48 hours, see what they can do. And
yeah. And it starts a dialogue, because I feel like a lot of nonprofits, it's something that they're not experienced in. And so creating a website is a big task, or creating an app, or creating any kind of social media or communication system. And so even just getting a groundwork of this is where you would even start, and these are the steps you need to take, I feel like would just help them so much in either continuing conversations with that designer that they were working with, or finding other people and knowing what they need on their team. No matter how successful the project is, they at least get a foundation.
I knew what you meant.
A foundation. Yeah. They at least get a foundation for how they can move forward.
And I love that you mentioned the connection factor of making those connections with either developers or just other nonprofits, and their connection to us too. I mean, the amount of networking that goes on at a hackathon is great. And it's even if they don't come out with a perfect project at the end of the weekend, they have those people that they know that they can turn to, because the people who participate in Code with a Cause, they really are doing it for the good. We don't give away any prize money. At our large hackathon that we had in October, it was a $100,000 prize that we divvied up. So this one really attracts a much different type of participant that does just want to use their skills for the good of the community. So
for the, I'm curious, for the other hackathons that you do that are more competition-based, it sounds like, are those also working with nonprofits?
Okay. They are. So they're still civic-focused, but it's a lot different. So instead of partnering Code with a Cause, where we have 10 nonprofits that we work with to create something especially for them, Global Hack 7 is what we had in October, and our focus was on foreign-born communities in the area. Mm-hmm. So we partnered with Casa de Salud, International Institute, a lot of nonprofits that really had, like, a stake in that community, and we worked with them directly to see what problems they're facing, and then we present those general problems to our participants, and they try to come up with a solution to one. Like, we usually present with a few challenges, okay. So it's framed just a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
How far ahead do you determine kind of the parameters / theme, perhaps, of the larger hackathon?
So we only run those hackathons every 2 years because we attract about 700 participants.
Oh, my gosh.
And like I said, we give away in 2016, which was the one before this one, we gave away $1 million. Oh, so that's God. For a nonprofit.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and that attracted 1,200 participants from like 6 different countries. This year we still had a great turnout with the prize and everything. 700 participants from, we had people from California, our second place pro division. He was a single developer that came in from California, won that. And then we had students from the East Coast also. So we have a pro division, a collegiate division, and a youth division in all of those. So,
and how long do those? Are those 48 hours as well?
Those are 48 hours. It is crazy. It's at Shafid's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeez. So this is like a sports event.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Damn. We are there the whole time. We are a staff of 4 strong. We slept in the locker rooms on air mattresses. It was...
Holy shit.
It was a great weekend.
So how... Let's talk about your team, actually, for a little bit, because that's something that should not go overlooked. Mm-hmm. 4 people.
4 people.
1,200 participants. 4 people.
How do 4 people manage something like this?
It is a lot of work, and we have so much community support, though. Volunteers. We had 200 volunteers throughout that weekend that came in to support us, and without them, we really couldn't have done it. Those 2 months leading up to the event, we were all just nose to the ground working the whole time.
Man. That's crazy. Yes,
but it was so worth it to see. So my part in Global Hack is I do the outreach. So I recruit the participants and I plan the hackathons. Mm-hmm. Seeing some of the people that you like directly recruited winning was one of the most like, this is why we do it. We do it because they came here for a purpose. But it was crazy. 2020. Watch out, because that's going to be the next one. So,
how early do you have to start planning if there's 4 people?
That I derailed. We will most likely come out with the theme late fall of this year, and then we'll really start. Planning will start in late summer, early fall, also. So. Okay.
So you get about a year.
Yeah, I guess it is about a year off. But then we also have the Code of the Cause.
Oh, yeah.
We have our fundraiser that's in September. But it definitely, we call it our off year because it doesn't feel anything like the years that we have the hackathon. So.
Yeah. So what is a fundraiser for you all look like?
So we call it Hack the Future.
I hope that that.
Good. We had it actually at the Moto Museum in, it would have been 2017, because we do them in our off year, because our hackathon really is like, it is a fundraiser of sorts. So
gotcha.
We come in, and in the 2017 fundraiser, they brought in students that had benefited from either our summer camp. So I didn't really mention with our summer camp program, because a lot of summer camps are very expensive for students and they're not accessible to everybody. So we have scholarships that are fully funded, and we had 400 students that participated, and a very big majority of them went on full scholarship in our summer camp last year. So equity is a big part of our organization and making sure it's accessible to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so we brought in a lot of those students. And I mean, we're a fun young organization. So I can only imagine, like, I bet it was a great night, just fundraising and for a good cause. And
that's in September?
It'll be in September this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Code with a Cause events only once a year. I bet we could have 3 or 4 a year and still not even like make a dent into the nonprofits in the area that really need that service. So hopefully each year the it just continues to grow and we can service more organizations.
Hey, so are you familiar with the term, is it the memory of a goldfish?
Yeah, isn't it like the shortest
memory? Yes,
thank
you. Yes.
Like 5 seconds or something?
Thank
like,
you. I said it earlier, and Javen's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And I'm like, "It's an idiom. Apparently, it's been disproven. The goldfish has short memories." I didn't read farther into it because I was in the middle of an interview, and I should probably have not been doing that. But I had to know.
Yeah,
pertinent information.
Yeah, I'm gonna act like I heard none of this, and I'm just gonna keep saying the memory of a goldfish.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's like what do they call it? It's like the Mandela effect. You know, where, like, people think Nelson Mandela died in jail. That wasn't the case. Or, like, you know, it's things that people believe to be true.
Berenstain versus Berenstain.
Yep.
Sherbert and Sherbet.
Okay, so which one is it? Is it Sherbert? Is it Sherbet?
It's Sherbet. There's no extra R.
So I don't care. I'm going to call it Sherbert. I don't care. That's, you know, I'll be wrong on that one for the rest of my life. I've got other problems, mm-hmm. You know. That's not one of them. we have gone, what were we talking about?
So how can people volunteer at Global Hack mm-hmm. if they are so interested?
So we have a lot of opportunities for them. It kind of ranges, a lot of our volunteer roles are more youth focused, especially if they have any kind of technology background. It's really hard to find people to give up their time in that field, but that's really where a lot of our volunteer work is needed. Like for the Youth Coding League final competition that we have coming up this weekend, we're still trying to fill some judges that have technical background where they can go through the code and make sure it's working well.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, even in general, if they don't have experience, we're always looking for setup, tear down, that kind of thing. So,
what about people that might be interested in participating in either Code for Cause mm-hmm. or obviously not this year, but the next mm-hmm. year that you do it or the larger hackathon?
Yeah.
Do you guys promote that through social? Can they reach out to you like ahead of time? Like how does that kind of work if they're interested in becoming part of that?
Yeah. So we kind of flood our social channels with that in the months leading up to it. E-blasts, if they're interested in getting on our newsletter just to kind of stay up to date on which hackathons we have coming up. Because
mm-hmm.
we also like, we don't like to say that only coders or developers can participate in these hackathons. Really, we see those teams that are so coding heavy, they get bogged down in the weekend. So we like to have like some user experience people on the team,
yeah.
some project managers. So it's really not, I just needed to plug that in real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Because we like really try to pull from a large range of participants.
Sure.
But yeah, any questions, you can contact me, McKenna@globalhack.org. I'll answer all of them.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's a team effort, right? Mm-hmm. Like coding you can't just do the code
mm-hmm.
because you have to have, especially if you're working with a client, like a nonprofit, like it's got to be accessible. People have to understand it. It's got to look good to mm-hmm. potential funders. So, I mean, it has to be everyone. It can't just be a team of coders that mm-hmm. are making something that works, but is yeah. it going to really function in a design kind of way?
I wish that was a skill set that I chose to maintain the course of.
I should have, yeah.
Coding?
I took a class in college, and when I got into, like, Java and, like, mm-hmm. all of that stuff, where it was like,
PHP,
oh, these are logics. Yeah, like, these are logics. Problems. I was like, you've already lost me because I hate that anyway. So I struggled through that.
It was just, it seems really tedious.
It's tedious, mm. yeah.
Like, more tedious than I care to be. Like, mm. if you put a period in the wrong place, the whole shit just goes.
Yeah. And then you're looking for one little dot.
Which is the, like,
it's the worst. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, it is nice.
Respect to all developers, for sure.
Yeah. It is nice to be able to do that and then see your final product. Like, that's exciting,
oh,
but
it's great.
I don't think it's worth it to me, personally. The way that I approached coding was that I need to know enough that if I'm working with a developer or a coder, that I can understand how things function in order to set up the files easier, make sure that things are working in a vision that's possible and feasible. And that's really all I need to know. I just need to know how it functions so that I'm not having to alter my design drastically in order to make it work within an actual system. That's how I think about it.
I just want to shout out my friend Kevin Olson. He's a wizard. He was the one person in school who, like, I think he's actually a professor, like, adjunct or something in Maryville now, but if you hear this, buddy, respect. Anyway,
I mean, I encourage everyone to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram just to kind of stay up to date on, we're pretty active on those sites. Even if you just want to see what's new in civic and like Civ Tech and all of that, youth coding, we do a lot of art or like post a lot of articles on that. If you're interested in getting involved, it's always a great place to stop by and see what we've got going on. So
after that episode, after we stopped recording that episode, we basically somehow got on the conversation of where McKenna was from, and it turned out, after a long story slash digression potentially, we learned that McKenna and I were in the same wedding of good friends of ours, and we wouldn't have known it otherwise. So that kind of f***ed me up for the whole evening.
You lost it a little.
Called my friends who live in California. Like, so-and-so, did you know so-and-so? They're like, yeah, dumbass.
Like, yeah, Why are you so excited?
Yeah, like, I went and looked at the wedding photos and everything, and sure enough, I'm standing on one side, and she's standing on the other side of the picture, and I'm like, well.
Small world.
At least a small damn state.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, we want to thank McKenna for joining us and talking to us about Global Hack and Code for a Cause.
Pretty awesome program.
Yeah, first and foremost. And we also want to talk to you about, if you may, just for a moment, about the student conference, which is coming up this weekend.
We gotta plug it, you know. It's really cool.
It's only right.
It's really cool. It's so there's two kind of parts of it. So there is a mixer that is on Friday, February 22nd, so this Friday, and I think it starts at 7 p.m. It's at Central Print.
And what's the mixer about? Is that open to the public, or?
So I'm not sure how it works this year, but if you buy a conference ticket, it is included in that cost. And in years past, we've had it open to the public for a small cover. But I don't know if that's true this year, so we should probably cut that. Or confirm.
Whatever.
But, and so the point of the mixer is to kind of give the students a way to kind of relax and have a little fun and socialize a little bit before the conference, because they've probably been working on their portfolios for a long time. They need a drink if they're 21 and over.
That's right. 21 and up only.
And so there are little stations that Marie at Central Print sets up for like screen printing and button making. There's snacks, there's drinks. It's really cool. It's a fun time. And then Saturday is the main event, and that runs from 9 to 4. It's a little long, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on at the
Oh, yeah. You don't feel it. I don't think it feels like that long.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not like one room the whole day.
Yeah, and so if you're a senior in college, you get your portfolio reviewed in the afternoon. And if you're a junior, you get 3 workshop sessions. If you're a senior, you get 2 workshop sessions in the portfolio review. And then we have keynote speakers in the morning. And this year, we have Bonnie Siegler, who is the creative director and founder of 8.5, which is a New York design studio. She'll be speaking. And we also have our very own Dee Nichols, who is a social entrepreneur in St. Louis. And that description doesn't do her justice, but if I were to try to describe it, it would take in another episode.
Well, it's funny you say that, Anna, because we do have her in a later episode this season.
Stay tuned.
That's right. She did that on purpose.
Oh, yeah. You know it. So she's going to be speaking, and it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt.
So check it out. If you haven't bought tickets, it's not too late, and we encourage you to go. Juniors and seniors, it's a good opportunity, fun, learn a lot.
And if not, then this just doesn't apply to you. Sorry.
And you probably aren't listening anymore, so.
Yep. And so, thank yous, as always.
So, I gotta thank McKenna from Global Hack and that entire team for all that they do. Obviously, we have to thank Alessio Summerfield, Forever an Astronaut, for lending us this equipment that we still have.
And, again, Critical Vibe for dope beats, because we do appreciate it. Life is better with music. If you don't believe me, let's argue. Not really. Okay? Okay. All right. What do you say, Anna? Anything else?
I'm done.
All right. We out. Oh, thank you all for listening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks to our listeners.
Yeah.
And our subscribers. Can't
cannot forget that. Cannot forget that. I feel bad that I almost did, but.
Too much on my notes.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you all for listening. We understand that you could be dedicating this time to literally anything else. So we appreciate that you spent it with us. And hopefully we've garnered your attention enough to listen to other episodes or, you know, come back next time.
Yeah, and if you have feedback, let us know. We are very open to that. We want to get better and we want to learn and we want to be encouraged.
For sure.
So anything of that sort, we will take.
That's right. And on that note,
now I'm done.
We out. Peace. Play us out, Critical. It's on the